welcome to episode 25 of the Geek Night In. I'm your host, Laura. I'm here again with Tilly this week.
Hi.
Hooray, Tilly's here. She's not asleep. That's good. It's good when Tilly's awake. I like Tilly. You're great.
That's nice.
Thanks. We've got a guest with us this week. Andre, do you want to tell people who you are, where people might know you from on the internet, that sort of thing?
I work with Laura on IndieHating.com. I'm the reviews editor, and I just generally am a geek and like to play video games and do all that kind of stuff and talk about it on Twitter and in articles.
Fantastic. And we should have Gemma with us this week. She's not here yet. We've had to start because tight podcast schedules and all that, but we're going to hopefully add her in later. Kate's unfortunately not able to join us this week, but hopefully she'll be with us next week. So, yeah, does anyone have anything particularly geeky they'd like to start with? Andre, have you got anything you'd particularly like to talk about this week?
Yes. As a guest? This week we saw the release of two trailers for upcoming anticipated films, Jurassic World being the long-awaited sequel to Jurassic Park 3, and Star Wars The Force Awakened. The movie that no one ever thought was really going to happen, but happened anyway, is Star Wars Episode 7, Force Awakens. And it's more so about Star Wars, but it's not necessarily about what's the content in those trailers. I want to talk about people's reactions to those trailers. The Jurassic Park one was mostly cool, and most people liked it. Like, I liked the tone they were going for, and the scale, and how they've kind of expounded upon the idea that where men are screwing with nature. That was great. A lot of people, some people had mixed, thoughts on some of the art direction and where the tone was actually going, and some of the people put in roles. I think there's actually a subsection of people that are probably very angry that Chris Pratt is a lead character. And then there's the Star Wars trailer where I think no one had a problem with it until they saw the lightsaber at the very end.
The lightsaber is literally all I know about it. I haven't seen the trailer.
And that is exactly the problem.
What?
I watched a trailer, the movie that's years in the making, what people have been asking for forever, and all they can talk about is a lightsaber that's shown for about a second and a half.
I just don't get it. It looks sort of, what's the word? Practical to me.
Well, this is it. Like, there's been lots of conversations about the fact that, Luke got his hand cut off in a lightsaber fight.
So did Anakin.
Yeah, so did Anakin.
And Count Dooku.
And Count Dooku. Lots of people lost their hands. Those crossbars at the end of the lightsaber stop the lightsaber sliding past and cutting your hand off.
I don't think it's a guard. This is what I don't understand. Like, if you think about where Star Wars has gone, even as someone who's casually watched the films, like, there's a loose understanding that everything in Star Wars has a mechanical function, and it actually is relatively well thought out. If you look at that lightsaber, I deduced this all in the range of 5 seconds of looking at it. When it activates, it has a very, very, very wimpy beam, and it can't sustain itself. Like, he doesn't know how to make a lightsaber, so to compensate for the lack of not knowing how to make a lightsaber, he put exhaust ports on it, which activate subsequently after the beam comes out, to compensate for that.
Well, fair to him, though, like, it's not like there's anyone around who could teach him how to make a lightsaber. Like, there's only Luke, so
it's basically
Luke's a bit of a shit Jedi.
And it looks like he's a Sith. Any Sith at this point are probably dead. It's like, okay, there's no one to teach me how to make my evil red lightsaber. I'm going to have to cobble this together with some... Like, if I need to have exhaust ports on the side, that's what I'll have. If I want to have guards on the side to stop my hand being cut off, I'll have that too. And this looks kind of cool.
It looks really cool. Like, it just looks, like you said, it looks hobbled together. It looks jury-rigged, and mechanically, it makes sense. People are, like, blowing this out of proportion. They're comparing it to, like, the initial Phantom Menace reveal trailer where Darth Maul had the double-sided lightsaber, which I feel is, like, a completely different and, utterly more marketing-pleasing move, because it's like, oh, we have lightsabers, right? Now we have two lightsabers. This is more just like, this thing is cool-looking and it has a purpose, because I was taught in film and theater and all that everything from the costumes to the props are supposed to reveal more character, and that's what that lightsaber does. It has character to it, in that it looks hobbled together and piecemeal, like he had to jury-rig it, and that's awesome.
It's either that he's jerry-rigged it, and that would tell us something about the character, or it's guards and it's a defensive thing.
Yeah.
That also tells us something about the character.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, I quite like Tilly deliberately, you've not watched any of that trailer just because... again, trailer culture, you're like, oh, I'm excited for this thing. I don't want to know anything about it before it's out.
Yeah. I know that there is a man and there is a lightsaber, and that is all I know.
I was the same way, right? Like, I didn't want to watch it, but, like, when it was just put right in front of me and everyone was talking about it, like, I basically had to yield, because I'm like, well, this is all anyone's going to be talking about.
Like,
luckily, it's not my job, though, to talk about nerdy things day to day, so I can get away with it. I just have to do this once a week.
Oh, I envy you.
Without spoiling anything for Tilly, that thing that happens towards the end that's, like, fan service-y toward the old films, you know exactly what I'm on about, Andre?
Yes.
Yeah. I got very excited about that. I was like, ah!
Oh, everyone was. Ben Kuchera was on Twitter from Polygon, and he was like, I started crying.
just to let everyone know, Gemma is with us, I think. Are you there, Gemma?
Hello, I hope so.
Yeah,
you can hear me.
Yeah, good. Gemma's with us. Gemma, Andre is with us this week from the Indie Haven podcast. Oh, Gemma. Hello, if you haven't worked that out already.
Yes.
So, hello, Gemma. So, we're talking about trailers. Did you have any thoughts on, have you seen the Star Wars trailer? Do you care about Star Wars? That sort of thing.
I haven't actually seen the trailer. I'd seen screenshots of this handguards thing, though. And I know a few people who are into fencing, for example. And in my sort of Facebook circles, it's generally agreement that having handguard is a good thing because more hands will, like, be intact in the Star Wars universe. This is a bit of a problem.
Well,
Tilly brought
this up. There is a problem in the series of people losing their hands.
Yeah.
Which is good. But, Tilly, you did... you liked the Jurassic Park trailer that went up, didn't you? Or am I misremembering that?
Yeah, I'm wondering what everyone's thoughts on that were. I really liked it.
I haven't seen that either.
The Jurassic... I thought you saw the Jurassic World one, and you were like, oh, that was cool.
I saw bits of it. It was playing on, like, an advert next to what I was actually watching.
Oh, fair enough.
I saw Chris Pratt running with dinosaurs, and...
Are you excited to watch Chris Pratt run with dinosaurs?
I am quite excited. Like, I will watch that one. I will watch that trailer. But I do want to... I've not seen the original Jurassic Park, so I'd quite like to see that before I do that. Someone at work has invited me to have a bro day, which apparently means we're going to sit in sweatpants and watch all these old movies that I've not seen. I'm very excited about that.
Oh, who are you doing that with?
Ben.
Aw, that sounds nice.
He also offered to guest on the podcast if we needed to.
I'm happy to have him on the podcast if he wants to come on. But anyway, we should continue talking about the topic that our current guest had before we talk about other guests. But yeah, Jurassic World. I was not overly excited about it. Like, I was like, okay, Chris Pratt, I like Chris Pratt, but it seems like more, oh, we made a place and filled it with dinosaurs. Oh, what a surprise, it went wrong again.
That's the thing, right?
Dinosaur supervisor, like, do they not learn from their past mistakes?
He fucked up so badly on the first Jurassic Park. Did he? They not know not to leave him in charge?
That's like the thing that makes this, like, narratively acceptable, is like the entire theme of the franchise is like there is no, like, human folly is infinite and we never learn from our mistakes in a way that's substantial. So, like, basically the idea now is that, like, it's the same thing except we've upped the scale by 1,000.
I'm pretty sure the United Nations would have stepped in after the first time this happened.
United Nations don't do shit, man.
Me and Tilly have spent the last week I've been watching parts of them, Tilly's been watching the whole thing, about films about the Rwandan genocide after the last time Tilly was on the podcast. And yeah, the United Nations don't do anything. If it were dinosaurs involved, I think they would do something. They don't care about people in Rwanda.
No, they
probably
don't care about black people, but they would care about dinosaurs.
They do care about white people being killed by dinosaurs.
Oh, no. What's...
Hotel Rwanda of dinosaurs.
Am I being killed by dinosaurs here? Why is the United Nations not helping?
Belgium's just sort of like faffing around with bureaucracy. Meanwhile, Velociraptor nom nom nom.
Oh goodness. Were you excited about that trailer then, Andre?
There's a lot that I'm excited about. Like, I like the idea of revisiting, like, I feel like the one thing that Jurassic Park has always lacked is kind of the scale to deliver the idea that what we're doing is very bad, and then when you turn it into a giant theme park that's like, hey guys, look at, we got our dinosaur prehistoric equivalent of Shamu, and that can never go wrong. And we got, you know, and we've got thousands of people running away from T-Rexes while they're getting eaten, like, this is actually quite an entertaining prospect to me. The other thing that's quite entertaining that's since been confirmed, and I don't know how Laura's going to feel about this, is that the Telltale Jurassic Park game, some of that is confirmed to be canon now because they're using that lore from that game in this movie.
Okay, at some point, Andre, me and you will play through that because I still think that game is terrible and we need to hash this out.
It is terrible and that's why it's wonderful.
You raise a good point there that I thought, like, when I saw this trailer as well, is like the fact that it's actually a theme park this time round. Because as far as I remember, the earlier three Jurassic Park films,
yeah,
all have the, like, this is a theme park. It's being like, it's like pre-opening. We've only got at most a dozen people exploring it. So you lack that scale.
Yeah, it's like a nature preserve. It's not like this. Like, this is the one instance where I think, like, you know, films like, you know, Godzilla and Pacific Rim, like those kinds of big, giant-scale destruction, Roland Emmerich level, everything is going bad, could be very well utilized if it has that intelligent kind of backdrop and the themes with Jurassic Park behind it. So, yeah, there's that.
It could be interesting. So far, Chris Pratt is the only redeeming feature that has me in any way excited to watch more films about people messing up and releasing dinosaurs.
That basically brings up the question, right? Like, I'm not a really big dinosaur person. Like, I'm not. Like, everyone I know is like, dude, it's got dinosaurs and it's got velociraptors. And, like, some of the people that I know, a friend who's, like, he's studying to be a marine biologist, and he saw the prehistoric, you know, monster Shamu that comes out of the water, and he just lost it. Any of you guys big on dinosaurs? I'm particularly not, but the movie still looked interesting.
I'm big on dinosaurs.
Is that because they're almost dragons?
No.
Why do you like dinosaurs?
I don't know. They're dinosaurs. They don't exist anymore. They're really cool. I got into a fight with someone at work about it because, you know, there's the different periods where there are dinosaurs. There's like the Cretaceous period and the Jurassic period. Yeah. And my boss was saying that dinosaurs didn't exist during the Jurassic period, and I was like, yeah, they did.
It's called Jurassic Park. It's called Jurassic Park because there were Jurassic dinosaurs.
T-Rex didn't exist during the Jurassic period. The movie is inaccurate, but it's not that inaccurate.
I also remembered it the other way around. The T-Rex was actually one of the very few dinosaurs which did exist in the Jurassic.
I thought it was in the Cretaceous.
Here's the thing. In my mind, it's that far back that it's like the dinosaur period. I don't think we need to split it up unless we're scientists. I think everyone else can just be like, okay,
yeah,
in but dinosaur the... times, there were dinosaurs.
To but be this fair, is the
all
thing.
Of them
like,
lived in one
you...
happy field at once.
If you think of, like, the Earth, like, the amount of time the Earth has existed in, as, like, the space of a year, dinosaurs died out in March. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's,
yeah? Yes.
If dinosaurs died out in March, humans have been around since November. So.
No, it's something like mid-December.
Yeah.
The dinosaur age is something like 40 or 50 times longer than humanity has ever been around.
Yeah, like,
because
there
were so many evolutions across
way
this period.
Longer than us. I used to watch, when I was at uni and I didn't have anything to do all day and I was at home, there was this show, I can't remember what it was called, but it was like recreations of dinosaurs fighting. It was like... this dinosaur was built for fighting, and this dinosaur was built for defense, and so let's make them fight. That's like.
Was that the bashing together sex hands you were doing?
It's usually.
And now we make them kiss.
How they kiss! No. Yeah, they were. They'd like set them against each other and like have them fight, and they'd explain. It was really interesting. But I only managed to see it like once because I had a cat. So, pretty obsessed with the cat.
Here's the other big problem with my imagining of dinosaurs is, in my mind, the dinosaurs and humans coexisted at some point.
No.
I know they didn't, but the way I view it in my head is like...
The Flintstones has ruined it for you.
The Flintstones might have been what ruined it for me, but in my head, I imagine cavemen beating up dinosaurs. Or dinosaurs brutally eating all the humans. I don't know.
I did just want to raise one point that we seem to have missed, is the fact I managed to successfully Rickroll Laura
oh,
with with that trailer. This is what I loved.
No, you did that with the Star Wars trailer. Gemma posted on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Gemma posted on Facebook, oh, the Star Wars 7 trailer's leaked early. It's really good. You should all watch it. And this was, like, Tuesday, and the trailer came out on Friday. And I trusted Gemma, because Gemma's, like, calm and responsible. She's, like, she's the grown-up of the group here. Gemma's the person that's, like, very rarely silly. I trust Gemma. I think, like, oh, Gemma says something, it must be true. So... it started off with the Star Wars music and the LucasArts thing, and then it went to a Rick Astley video. And it is the first time I have been caught off guard and genuinely Rickrolled by someone in years. So well done, Gemma.
Okay, yeah.
I loved the opportunity because it felt like I was thinking about it for a long time, and I thought, no, people are totally going to go for this. The thing is, in my defense, all I did was actually reshare the post, and what I put in the comment thing was, and just left it ambiguous.
Do you want to know, like, the true sign of how much I trust you, Gemma? Without having even watched it yet, I right-clicked, copied the link, and went and posted on Twitter, oh my god, the Star Wars 7 trailer's leaked. Because I had to delete that post because I trusted you that much that I was like, oh, Gemma's posted the Star Wars 7 trailer. I want to share that before it goes down. So for about 30 seconds, I was so tricked that I posted it without even looking at it because of you, Gemma.
Oh, my friend Sanjay's going to love that because he's the one who got me with it.
You have an evil thought and look what it turns into.
Oh, dear.
Gemma. I was going to make two more quick points. The other thing that's the thing about that trailer that was very disappointing to me is that it lacked any sort of immediate British overtones like the originals had, because they had a lot of really funny British characters. Like, there was no Sir Richard Attenborough, like, walking around being like, I'm idealistic and this could never go wrong.
Oh.
Or never go wrong.
Interesting side note for the trailer discussion we've got. The voiceover in the Star Wars trailer was Andy Serkis.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Volumes
Andy Serkis. So, when people were asking, like, people knew that in some way Andy Serkis was involved in Star Wars 7. We don't know if he's probably a character as well, I guess, but he did the voiceover in the trailer. So, that was
what I love is that snippet of information was first revealed to me by IndieHaven, because it was your interview with Mike Bithell on which he pointed out that Andy Serkis is on Star Wars 7. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
I goodness. Can't count the number of things I only know because they're on IndieHaven.
Oh, goodness. Weirdest thing about stuff on IndieHaven, what's the website?
IndieHaven.com.
No. Shush. The other indie site. What's the other indie site? It's going to annoy me. Give me one second.
Is there a big one?
It's one of the big sites that covers indies.
Static?
Ah, no. Give me a second. This is me being like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay. While you say that, while you're digging up that information, I wanted to make a second point. The other thing about trailers is they're in no way indicative of final quality of a film, despite whatever some people think. I remember, like, every time someone says, dude, that trailer was so awesome, the first thing I show them is the Dark Knight Rises trailer, because I was like, this is an immaculately built trailer that makes this look like a good dramatic film. And then the movie that came out subsequently was very mediocre and disappointing.
I really enjoyed that film, but I found the thing I wanted to say. It was Destructoid. Jonathan Holmes at Destructoid didn't find out that Andy Serkis was in Volume until I shared the post from IndieHaven. And Jonathan Holmes was like, wait, Andy Serkis is in Volume? I was like, yeah, how do you not know? You write for a big site. Because IndieHaven's really cool. Go read IndieHaven.
Yeah, go read IndieHaven. Give us, yeah.
Yeah, woo. Anyway, Tilly, you've got things to talk about.
Yes, I have a thing. What First of all, do any of you read fan fiction?
I do.
Yeah. I read a little bit because friends demand that I do.
So, yeah, Tilly's going to talk about fan fiction.
Yeah, well, we were talking last night about the ending of Naruto. And while
Which is terrible. The ending's terrible. It's terrible as terrible.
I haven't actually read the final chapter, but I hear it's not very good. but I was saying I read a fan fiction once that was, like, better than how the ending was. And, like, I think it's really amazing when fans, like, look at a series and go, no, I don't like this, and then, like, just fix it, which is great.
Yeah, well, like, around the time when Lost finished and people were really upset with how Lost ended, there were some really interesting, like, rewritten scripts for the finale of Lost that people were shopping around. And again, it's a nice thing to think about, like, these, like, hey, here's a better way we could wrap up that universe, let the fans do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, like, in the fan fiction I read, it actually made, like, the Naruto and Hinata pairing make sense. Because, to me, it just doesn't.
No, it doesn't make sense in the Naruto that exists.
Yeah.
But do you want to just run down this fan fiction a little bit quickly? And...
Yeah, basically, it was that the, like, when, you know, the nine-tailed fox was sealed inside Naruto as a baby, there was too much of the Kyuubi soul that it couldn't be...
Do you want to start that over?
Yeah, that is not the plot. The plot was that the fox got sealed inside baby Naruto, and but the Kyuubi was too much for him to handle. Like, he couldn't cope with his soul and the Kyuubi soul inside him and still, like, live a normal life. So when he was a baby, he had to be sealed away. And, like, you know, protected from everything and all this bollocks. And they created a shadow clone of him that he could sort of vicariously live through. So the Naruto that we have that's, like, running around and doing all this shit and wanting to be Hokage and whatnot, that's a shadow clone of the real Naruto. And Hinata finds this out. And she can't actually gain access to the real Naruto. Because it was unfinished, and then I lost interest in Naruto when I actually, you know, before it was finished. but she would go to where he was and sing to him, and that would, like, soothe him and make it easier, and it was really nice.
And basically that meant there was actually some explanation to justify why they shoved the two of them in a relationship at the end of Naruto.
Yeah.
And, like... Here's the thing. I am kind of, like, on the topic of Naruto fanfiction, I am kind of tempted to write a Naruto fanfiction because, like, I've talked about this in a couple of places before. Like, when I used to be interested in Naruto before I gave up on it because it was going nowhere for a long period of time, I had an ending that I was like, this is how I would love to see it end. And after the ending's been so terrible, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I will write that ending that I quite liked the idea of.
I completely agree with this mindset. Like, it's like exactly like Tilly said. Like, there's been points where I contemplate literally rewriting Star Wars episodes 1, 2, and 3 because I want to acknowledge that those are actually canon in any respect.
Well, like, today I've been reading a lot of Supernatural fanfiction. And, like, we talked about Supernatural before and how it's, like, horrendously racist and misogynistic and homophobic and transphobic. And it's just, if the two main characters weren't so darn cute, I just wouldn't watch it. Like, I've been reading a lot of fanfiction and they just fix a lot of things. And it's just really nice to see this, like, this flawed media and then to be like, oh, well, I'm going to go read a better version of it. You know, I'm going to do, like with Harry Potter as well. And, like, a while ago I was tweeting out headcanons about Harry Potter, like, for neuroatypical people and for trans people and stuff like that. Like, there's this whole world that you can really dig into there that J.K. Rowling just skimmed over.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my favorite ones, is there is a lot of people on, like, Tumblr communities that love writing, like, taking the attributes that are, like, given to the various houses in Hogwarts, in Harry Potter, and being like, okay, well, let's assume people with those temperaments were trying to make things better for the people around them. What ways would those kind of people do that for, you know, the other people in their lives? And it goes from simple things to, like, I think it was Hufflepuff's, like, developing spells to help people on the autistic spectrum to, like, have spells that would calm some of the sensory stuff around them and make things easier for them that way. And, like,
my favorite ones are the ones where trans men and women join Slytherin and Gryffindor, like, because they think they're the saviors and they think they know everything. They're a bit transphobic at the start, and the Slytherins are like, no, and they, like, you know, create these spells that, like, if you say, like, if you misgendered a trans person, they create spells that mean that slugs crawl out of your throat. or, you know, like...
Great ways to discourage stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And they, like, they don't bother with, you know, with playing nice. They leave that to the Ravenclaws and the Hufflepuffs. They're just, like, on the defensive straight away. They're like, right, this is a member of our family and there is no way in hell you are going to make her feel uncomfortable, so fuck you.
See, this is why I love this kind of stuff. I love the I love the fact that fans can do the kind of stuff that no creator would ever take the risk to do.
Yes.
Like, here's the thing. I'm going to go on a slight side note, and I'm going to talk about the plot of the Naruto fanfiction I want to write, because god damn it, I want to write Naruto fanfiction.
You don't have time.
My headphones being pulled out. Oh no, I don't know what's happening.
I was attempting to rub her shoulder comfortingly, and I accidentally pulled her headphone out.
There we go. So, Naruto fanfiction. I kind of want to rewrite the ending so that it has a little more consequence to it. Without going too deep into the ending of Naruto as it actually happened, what I wanted to see was Naruto is fighting the big final battle against the ultimate evil, and ultimately I wanted to see Naruto die in that battle. I wanted to see then Sasuke, who has irredeemably messed everything up for everyone, have that as his moment of redemption and be like, no, I'm gonna finish what Naruto started and save everyone. Sasuke actually does something impactful and, like, saves the day and saves everyone. Everyone's waiting for Naruto to come back from the final confrontation, and they see a silhouette walking over the sunset, and it's like, ah, it's Naruto coming back. And it's Sasuke carrying Naruto's body back to the village, and he's made an honorary Hokage in respect of sort of what he did. Sasuke's pardoned for his crimes because of the fact that he, you know, did in the end do the right thing and finish off what Naruto was trying to do. And we have an ending with some consequences that justifies why it lets Sasuke get away with all the crap he got away with. So that's what I wanted to do with Naruto's ending, and I'm kind of tempted to write something like that at some point.
You should make it like a Patreon goal.
Oh god, I might do that just because I need Patreon goals that aren't to do with butts.
Naruto was like such a huge thing with the people I grew up with, and it seems like everyone's favorite pairings have just got together. Like, I think Sakura and Sasuke are together, Naruto and Hinata are together, and my friend who was telling me about this, she actually told me that Neji got together with Rock Lee, but
really,
unfortunately, that didn't help.
That would have actually made me quite happy.
Yeah. So I always thought that Naruto and Gaara would have made a really good pairing.
They would have made a really good pairing. They understand each other. Again, that will only ever happen in fanfiction.
I know. So every time I'm like, ah, yes, I need a decently written piece of, you know.
Of gay media about these two lovely, heartbroken people.
Actually, to be fair, when I do that, I read Star Trek fanfiction.
So. Oh god, there's so much good Star Trek. There is so much good Star Trek fanfiction out there.
There is, though. Like, if you need something that's gonna make you swoon, you go for Spock.
Do you want to give us like your top three Star Trek fanfictions, and then we'll move on from fanfiction?
I do my top three fanfictions ever.
Okay, do your top three fanfictions ever.
Okay, well, obviously the first one is Veritas, which is a Star Trek. Yeah, it's a new Star Trek fanfiction, so it's set between the first movie and the second
of the reboot of Star Trek.
No, it's not. It's set after the second.
It's in the universe of the new Star Trek films.
Yes, yeah. No, it's before the second. It's between the first and the second. There we go. And they are being... Spock and Kirk are basically being put on trial because someone's made a complaint about the fact that they're going out, and they're not actually going out. But they were saying about how, like, oh, it endangers the rest of the crew because, you know, you have such a regard for each other that, you know, you put the rest of the crew in danger. And it leads to this, like, real soul-searching. And it's mostly written from Kirk's point of view. So there's still this soul-searching on his part. Like, okay, so if Spock was, you know, captured and I needed to save him, where would I draw the line? And it's really awesome. And there's a, like, really steamy sex scene as well. And it's great.
Yeah, steamy sex scenes. Okay, what's your next one?
The next one, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a supernatural one. Where it's Destiel, obviously.
Oh, because
it's basically canon, but fuck Supernatural.
Okay. to just make a little point, the reason why Destiel is basically canon, there was an episode of Supernatural in which Dean and Castiel were initially written in the script for Castiel to say I love you to Dean.
Dean was supposed to say I love you, and it was changed to I need you.
Yes. Okay, basically the line was written that one of them would confess their love, and then it got cut. So it's basically canon.
Well, it's basically canon in like literally every other way as well. But anyway, so Dean and Castiel are both doctors. It's like it's an alternative universe one. And Dean and Castiel are both doctors, and they work in a hospital. And Sam is getting married, and he's had drug problems in the past, and he's marrying one of his like former drug partners or whatever. And Dean has to go back home for the wedding, and he asks Castiel to come with him because they're quite good friends. And then they bang.
This seems to be a recurring theme in your favorite ones: is gay people are platonic friends, and then they bang.
And then what's this is my favorite theme in real life.
you missed this, but Tilly just punched me on the arm and did a really cheesy smile when she said that. Oh goodness! What's your last one?
That one is also a Supernatural AU, but it's a coffee shop AU.
Oh, coffee shop AUs are the best.
But Gabriel owns a coffee shop and Castiel works there, and Dean comes in every day to get a coffee, and they start talking, and it's just. They haven't banged yet, but I'm waiting for it.
They're going to bang, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, with that out of the way, Gemma, you have something you want to talk about this week.
There is no banging involved, Seth.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
What's the point? I'm going to bed.
Gemma, we are disappointed in you. Can you put banging into the story somewhere?
Just say your opinion and then they banged. Perfect.
That could be awkward, given that this involves AIs.
Fine.
I'm okay with AI think tanks banging.
The tanks were pretty obnoxious. You wouldn't really want to go there.
Okay, well, what's it about? What's your topic?
I am referring to what is actually, like, aside from Sonic, is my chief fandom, and that's Ghost in the Shell. And for people who haven't already been aware, Ghost in the Shell Online had a trailer released this last week.
So I'm assuming this is an online MMO type game based on the anime.
It actually, well, it's based on Standalone Complex, as far as I can tell.
Do you want to tell people who have no idea about Ghost in the Shell what Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex is?
She means me. I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, all the Ghost in the Shell things, as far as I can tell, all revolve around this basically specialist police unit who specialise in cyber warfare in this cyberpunk age when humanity has access to cyber brains. So their consciousnesses are put into cyborg brains, and they can engage with the internet in new and fantastic and visual ways and stuff like this. And so in this world, there's this police security section 9 who specialise in basically cyber warfare and sort of heading it off, and it usually involves political movements of some sort. So somebody will be trying to manipulate society, and
it's like let's hack into people's brains and influence their decisions so that we can further our political agendas.
This reminds me of a lot of films.
It does, but it handles it well. It's good.
Right. And it's all based on the Ghost in the Shell manga, which is from the late 80s, I think, and which has influenced a lot of The Matrix, but it in turn was influenced by the likes of Philip K. Dick and Blade Runner and things like that. But anyway, Standalone Complex is my entry point into Ghost in the Shell generally, and I've read the manga and seen the films and and played some of the games as well. But now they've announced this online, basically it's an online combat, arena-based combat game, which I can't help but think is very cannily announced, given that it's basically almost identical to Hearthstone. Not Hearthstone. Overwatch. Blizzard's new thing. Which is a thing where you get, I think it's 5 or 6 players per team.
Minority Report. Sorry.
Was that the film it reminded you of?
Yeah.
Well, can I just say, there have been more embarrassing outbursts on my history of podcasts. The best one is still... what's the podcast that Tom Hatfield does?
Not a game.
Not a game. Philippa War once just shouted out areola in the middle of a sentence, so you're not, you know, you could have been worse, Tilly. But continue.
I wasn't as derailed before you said areola.
You were talking about Overwatch.
Oh, yes. Yeah. These two games seem to be of the same genre, so you'll get, like, six people on a team. They'll all get into an arena and shoot each other. It's a third-person, rather, or first-person shooter game.
Okay, here's my big question about this Ghost in the Shell shooting game that's on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Is this just a front for them to get you to connect your brain to the internet so that they can take you over? Do you have to connect your brain to the internet to play this game?
There is some real meta shit going on right now.
Exactly. It's like, oh, in order to play this game, you need to directly plug your brain into the internet, and then, you know, it's Ghost in the Shell's just going to happen.
No, but I maintain that even despite the series level of, like, the sheer number of people who get ghost hacked, I would still get a cyber brain. Because
even awesome. If people might be able to hack your brain.
Yeah, I would build firewalls.
Would you get a cyber brain?
Depends on how much control I have over it. Can I switch off my feelings?
Only you would go there.
Really, like, not just me.
Okay,
you can switch off pain receptors, though.
I have a lot of feelings, and sometimes I don't want to feel them all.
Well,
so
here's the problem that might arise. If you've got a cyborg brain, it's going to be like a hard drive. You'll never forget things.
Yeah, but I won't feel things in connection.
You can delete the memories.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can actually offload your memories.
You can delete all of your painful memories. Don't get a cyborg brain, Tilly. Stay human.
I'll just delete, like, the first 2 years of our relationship.
No.
If I was going to have a cyborg brain, it would have to be like... it would have to be something like the first Terminator, where he's in that motel room and the landlord comes and knocks at the door and asks if he's okay. And then in his right eye or whatever, that's the cybernetic eye, you see a list of multiple choice responses, and they're like, I'm fine, thank you, and fuck you, asshole.
Basically, you want a cyborg brain so that you can go through Telltale Walking Dead, like, conversation trees.
I want, like, a algorithm that can produce every grammatically correct answer, no matter how inappropriate contextually.
That like, would be great. I agree with Andre. I'm having a cyborg brain.
Okay, let's all get cyborg brains.
I feel less excited about this game now that it doesn't have that, because it is just arena-based combat. However,
you're an indie developer, Gemma. Go make the game where we have to plug our brains in.
Yeah,
and...
combine fan fiction and game development.
Yeah,
make
I'll just
it
get
special.
In touch with, like, Alan Zucconi and Robin Baumgarten or something. They're bound to have some sort of custom controller which involves your brain at some point in their future.
Oh, goodness.
That'd be fine, yeah.
Well, this is the inevitable path of indie game development. Eventually someone is going to create the game controlled by your brain, and the cyborgs will take over and the world will fall into disrepair.
There was an episode of Elementary about this.
It's all about...
Oh,
Wetfair.
Was this the AI one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember the kid having the rant about the button?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, basically there was
a
new series of Elementary, the American Sherlock show, had a really good, I thought, episode about basically a computer that became self-aware, or that they thought had become self-aware, and a murder that, like, the suspicion was that the murder had been committed in order to prevent any further work being done on this potentially self-aware AI. And, like, it was a really interesting episode. Basically, like, they were doing a lot of stuff with, like, really complex versions of the Turing test, trying to prove or disprove whether this computer was responding in a way that it could or could not have done as a robot. It was very interesting.
Well, in this game, you get to control, like, or command AIs. Like I mentioned, you get the think tank AIs, and I can't quite tell if they're Tachikomas or Fuchikomas in this game. But basically, the where this sits aside from Overwatch, as far as I can tell, is that you get more AI to play with, so you can send around tanks and things to sort of cause distractions or something like that. But anyway, I was excited about it. It's actually tempting me away from Overwatch, which was surprising, because I got really excited about that idea.
That's cool. Hooray. I'm glad you found something you enjoyed. I'm just thinking, what do I want to talk about this week? I'm doing the segment we always have on this podcast where I rant about something that did some bad stuff with representation, because that's That's a routine thing that comes up on this podcast.
Is it the house episode?
Not the one we watched today, but the one I was moaning about like a couple of weeks ago that I haven't moaned about on this podcast yet.
Well, talk about that one and then tell me what you thought of the one today.
Okay, we got two house episodes to talk about conflicting things. So House is a show that is basically Sherlock Holmes, but about a doctor. And
I'm not sure there's anyone who doesn't know what
House is. Well, I'm doing that if people don't know. And basically, he's a dick to everyone. He's horrible to people, to patients, because usually either A, they've done something wrong, or B, they're hiding something, and as such, he uses that as his excuse to be a jerk to them. And that's fine because apparently in the context, because he gets results and he does like gets to the bottom of things in the end, and as such they forgive him for being a dick to people who he perceives as having deserved it. And the first episode I'm going to talk about this is one where basically the end of this episode is it turns out that the person he's been treating, born intersex, and that this woman had no ability for her body to deal with testosterone and absorb testosterone, but she did have a pair of testicles inside. And basically, House is a real horrible jerk to her. He comes in and reveals this by being like, basically misgendering her and repeatedly calling her male, shouting at her and being incredibly offensive, to the point that she drops her robe and is like, look at this body you're looking at, don't tell me I'm male. She's like crying this at him, and he's like, no, it's like, stop, you're just worried because, like, you're just reacting like this because of the testosterone problem, let's go chop off your balls. And he's really, really horribly offensive to her. Usually House is only a dick to patients who've either hidden something from him that stopped him curing them, or have done something actively wrong to make, like, themselves the cause of their illness. Like, this just seemed really out of place and was completely unnecessarily horrible. So that was an episode I was like, oh, not keen on that. And then the other one is one I watched today in season 3 about an autistic boy. And the portrayal of autism is really awkwardly handled. There's a lot of shorthand stuff they do to try and sum up autism that's really blunt force, out of date descriptions of it and ways to deal with it. Like, I had a lot of problems with the portrayal. However, I'm glad I did watch the episode because, like, it ended on a really sweet note that advanced House as a character, which is why I'm kind of willing to excuse it to a degree, in that, like, the way they end this episode is that basically the autistic character has an obsession with a particular games console, and basically through this episode House has been talking about how he doesn't get sentimental about gifts from patients he's helped, and this boy at the end like just hands House his games console before leaving, which, if I remember correctly from later episodes of House I've seen, he does keep with him. Like, he sits and plays this thing, and it was a nice sweet piece of character development for House in an episode where there was a lot of like brute force misrepresentation of autism. So yeah, there's my moaning about stuff for this week. Got to wedge that in
title.
Yeah, Laura moans about stuff because she's mad. Grumble, 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 grumble. So that's me moaning about House.
Can I mention something that I've just noticed?
What have you just noticed?
Earlier today, Laura bought a bag of M&Ms from Tesco, and she's taken all the blue ones out and put them in a shot glass.
I like the blue ones. I wanted to save them. That was the only thing that was about the right size to put them in, was a shot glass.
No, I've been here all evening looking at the shot glass going, what is that?
It's a double shot glass. So I have like a double shot-sized shot glass full of blue M&Ms. Because, yeah, we're having a conversation about autistic spectrum stuff, and I have a weird glass full of M&Ms that are all one colour. Because, yay!
It's funny that he does mention that, though, because it actually brought up the topic of discussion I want to do next.
Oh, what do you want to talk about?
You said Tesco, and then I remembered, oh, yeah, Black Friday made the transition to Great Britain.
Oh, God. Gemma, oh, did
Sweden, I would add.
Oh, Gemma, did you see any Black Friday stuff going on in Sweden?
Yes, and actually a friend of mine was just saying that she's never seen it before this year. It seems to have infected the UK and Sweden this
it's
year.
It's hit Europe this year. And did you see any of the things in person? And if so, how terrified were you?
I only saw it because I don't expose myself to much advertising on TV or anything, but I did see some TV adverts for Samsung flat screens and black. It's just being labeled as Black Friday. There's no Swedish equivalent for it, so they just say the English. And yeah, it's just a sale. It's just marketed as a sale.
I had no idea that it was being advertised until I went out into town the other day and saw there was a sign on like an already discount store, like store 21. It was like
a cheap
Black
Friday
sale, and they had like three things in there that were on sale.
Well, I'm going to tell you the story of my experience, because again, I had no idea that Black Friday was infecting the UK. And like, I went out at midnight to go to game in order to go and pick up Pokemon at midnight, because I had a coach journey to do the next day, and I thought, I want Pokemon. So
also, she's a giant nerd.
I'm a giant nerd, if you haven't heard that already.
Emphasis on
I write about video games for a living. I am a giant nerd.
Emphasis on the giant.
Oh, yeah. So I went to get Pokemon at midnight, and I'm walking past Tesco on the way to this game store, and I saw they had Black Friday posters up, and there were huge queues outside. I was like, oh, okay. So I go and pick up Pokemon, and I walk home, and I go past Tesco, and I'm like, okay, let's just peek my head in and see what's going on. And there were people climbing over escalators to try and get past barricades that had been put up to, like, limit how much stock could be bought at a time. There were, like, trolleys everywhere. They had police cars parked outside the entrance. There were people, like, climbing over each other. Like, Andre, I sent you a video of my life at Tesco.
And when you think... I saw that, and I'm like, oh, look. Like, every Black Friday... Like, every time there's a sale in America for the past 10 years.
Oh, goodness, it was terrifying. It was... Like, I walked into Tesco, had a look, and was like, nope. And I just walked straight back out, because I was like...
Like...
This was, like, half an hour after the Black Friday stuff had gone on sale, and it was still... teeming with people.
This was astonishing to me that I didn't know that it didn't actually cross over you guys. I didn't realize that, like, I thought you had some sort of regional equivalent of, like, days where, like, sales are crazy and stuff. I had no idea you didn't know about the pandemonium that ensues when stuff like that happens. I'm surprised when you walked by, people were flying out the windows.
I don't understand why we're doing it, though, because isn't Black Friday connected to Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Very loosely.
It's the day after Thanksgiving. It's, hey, you've been thankful to each other. You should all now be thankful for yourselves and buy stuff.
What's I was reading an article as well, which said that actually sales of turkeys go up, so that about a sixth of people in Britain apparently buy turkeys for Thanksgiving. What?
How strange. Anyway, Tilly's... did you have something else you wanted to say, or are you going to bed?
I'm going to go to bed, because I took my sleeping pill like an hour ago, so...
And it's having its effect now, but...
It is.
Good night, Tilly.
Good night.
Good night.
Sure.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Andre, and talk to you soon, Gemma. And
talk to me too,
What's interesting is, you guys basically, I remember the first year that Black Friday happened here on, like, mass scale, like, exactly what the terror that Laura went through is, like, what we went through, and people were going nuts. Now what Black Friday is, it's still bad, but what you guys, if you guys continue with it, what it'll get to the point is, every time around when it's going to happen again, they'll hire a lot more security, they will line people up in queues, they will let people in, like, a certain quantity at a time, and let them out, and, you know, like...
This is the thing that Sweden and Britain will both do very well, because I've realised over the course of this past year, we are united by our queuing culture.
The gaming store, the gaming
Sweden take a little coupon to join a queue. Yeah. That's it.
Well, the gaming store I went into, they were having some minimal Black Friday sales, and they did it really well. They handled it by doing pre-queuing at about 11:30, so about half an hour before they were selling stuff. They'd moved all the stuff they were selling out of the way, and were like, okay, the staff come outside and they're like, right, what are you after? Okay, we'll let you in. You're queuing in this queue, moving people into queues like half an hour before anything was sold. People would pay for their stuff in advance and be given a ticket, being like, you get, like, okay, we know how much of each of these items we have. You've got a ticket, you'll definitely get one. You've got a ticket, you'll definitely get one. And, like, putting people through. And then when it turns midnight, it's like, right, okay, let's start processing those queues. And, like, they would like, you hand over your ticket, they go get your thing out the back, hand it to you, you leave. And it was all really well handled. And, like, the people who were queuing to come in still were being, going in through one entrance, and people who'd bought stuff were being taken out another entrance. It worked really well.
Yes.
Then I went past the supermarket, and it was terrifying.
Oh. Like, there's a running death count, I forget where, but there's, like, 7 to 9 people across, just across the United States that have died.
The United States, in total, 7 people have died. I can't remember how many people have been injured.
Crushed and, you know, injured horribly.
Yeah. That is more people than died in the fire of London. The Great Fire of London killed 6 people.
Because you got that it's incredible, right? Like, but we've also dispersed it here in that, like, people realize that the internet exists, so now everyone just crashes websites, because that's also a thing around Black Friday. A lot of consumer websites just and we start on Thanksgiving now. Now there is Thanksgiving Day sales now too.
Goodness.
Monday, you know, like, it's more distributed now, so it's not all in Sandy on Monday.
See, I thought we would be fine just only having Boxing Day sales and nothing else. Also, I didn't know this, but Boxing Day is not a thing in America.
Yeah,
Americans don't know what Boxing Day is. As, nope. Like, the day after Christmas, that you do nothing and get drunk and eat the rest of your leftover Christmas
food. Nope, not a thing that we have. Not even remotely. The first time I've ever heard of it in my whole life.
Yeah. See, we don't have, like, Thanksgiving. Like, we don't have Black Friday. Well, we didn't have Black Friday, but instead we used to have sales on Boxing Day, which was, oh, did you get shopping vouchers and money from elderly grandparents for Christmas? Go spend it on Boxing Day.
We don't have it in Sweden either. And here, this is one of the countries where they actually open presents on Christmas Eve, for example. Christmas Day, rather than Boxing Day, is the one in which you go around to see family and stuff. Which we all do that on certainly my family does it on Boxing Day anyway. That seems to be the norm.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got maybe 5 minutes or so left to wind up. Has anyone got anything else they're burning to talk about, or should we sort of wrap it up here?
I'm pretty good.
I think this is probably a good place to wrap it up. So thank you very much for joining us, everyone, this week. Time to do stuff from... Oh, are you?
I was going to interject with my question.
Oh, okay, Gemma, do your question. What's your question?
This isn't actually terribly geeky in and of itself, but basically today I came to realise, like, the stock I put in my plush Sonic... Basically because I have this plush of Sonic who I bought back in 1993 or something. But I always return to it as like my comfort, I guess. But then it occurred to me, like, I wondered if you guys had anything sort of particularly sort of geeky that you just sort of returned to as some sort of comfort thing.
Oh, that is a good question. Oh, I'm trying to think now.
It actually came to me very recently, but my latest thing that I got was my brother and I, like, my whole family, we've always loved Mega Man X. And at a recent convention, Keiji Inafune was there, and my brother got our childhood Mega Man X cartridge, which he spent countless hours playing, replaying, and mastering that game. And he signed it, so now I keep it on my desk. And I look at it every day, and I love it, and it's just like, I put so much time into that Capcom kind of franchise. It was such a hard choice because I actually have a bigger affinity for Mega Man Legends, and it was like Mega Man Legends or Mega Man X, but Mega Man X meant more to the whole family, and like I was like, I put even more time into this, so I'm just going to do it with Mega Man X, and now I just have this cart with his, you know, his very hastily but still beautiful Japanese signature on it.
I wish I had something. Actually, I do have one geeky thing that I kind of love in that same way, which is I have a VHS copy of the first Power Rangers movie,
yeah!
Signed by the White Ranger. That is like my geeky thing that I'm just like, oh, I love that I have this.
Oh, okay, this is a perfect time to interject one more thing. So I was talking to Jose, right, Laura. Jose is the managing editor on New Haven. And I forget what launched it into Power Rangers. I forget what conversation it was, but then I ultimately talked to you and Jose at the same time about Power Rangers. And Jose told me that Tommy the Green Ranger holds the world record for most wooden blocks broken in free fall jumping from a plane. And I'm like...
yeah, he's Jason David Frank, or whichever way round his names go. He is like a proper wrestler, MMA fighter, like martial artist. He's a proper like professional fighter for a living.
And Jose was like, I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like, are you lying to me? Like, that's too badass to be true. And then he's like, no, I'll find a video of it. So there's like this 9-minute video out there of him like free falling with like 10 guys around him, and he's just like punching these, holding the wood, and he's punching it. He's turning and punching it while he's in free fall.
That is amazing.
Awesome.
Oh, goodness. With that, let's do the self-promotion. So anyone that wants to find Tilly can find her at Gathering Tilly on Twitter. Gemma, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, that's what it's called, at Raygun Goth. And I was going to say, actually, I'd be kind of intrigued to, if anybody like listening has like some sort of comfort thing or something which inspires them in like a geeky way, I was wondering like if they could tweet at the Geek Night In.
When the podcast goes out, I am going to tweet this from the Geek Night In account and retweet it and stuff. So hopefully we'll get some feedback we can share on the next podcast, I would hope.
Yeah. Get a conversation going or something, yeah.
But yeah, Andre, where can we find you on the internet?
If you're interested in my ramblings on a professional level, I work for Indie Haven. I'm the reviews editor. If you just want to follow me, my general rambling, you can find me on Twitter at Andre2.0. If there's anything relevant, I'll direct you to it.
Fantastic. And now's the bit where I have to do my list of self-promotion, which will take a while. You can find me on Twitter at Laura K. Buzz. If you like the work I do, be it like the dozens of podcasts I do or any of the other stuff, you can support me on Patreon at patreon.com/Laura K. Buzz. That's what pays the bills now. I gave up my day job. I am writing all the time. I need your money. Other than that, you can listen to my various podcasts by Googling or iTunesing them. So I'm on The Geek Night In, Oh No Video Games, the Indie Haven Podcast, Category Video Games, Laura's Gaming Butts, and I'm now also on the Podquisition, which is Jim Sterling's new Jimquisition podcast. So go look all of those up. I talk about words all week.
I'm more stunned that you remembered all of them in order.
Yeah, I think I did okay there. So thank you for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you all again soon.
Goodbye. Bye. Love you guys.